This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, Pewter Peeps? Welcome into a very special Wednesday episode of the PewterCast, your number one spot for all things Tampa Bay Buccaneers news, analysis, takes, hot and otherwise, about your defending Super Bowl champions this Wednesday edition on a Thursday, brought to you by our good friends at the Fansided Network and, of course, BetUS.com. I am Steve Carney. Ren will be along here in just a second. As we do for the first episode of each week, we look across the field as we take a look at this weekend's upcoming opponent, the Chicago Bears, coming to Raymond James Stadium for week number 7, as the Bucs will look to go to 6-1 on the year. And this may be a little bit of a payback because of the fact that the Bucs went to Soldier Field last year in prime time and ended up losing 20-19. And that is something that we will certainly get into with Larry Dyer, the host of Bears Talk Underground, here in just a matter of moments. This is actually kind of a 2-in-1 sort of podcast, because this is actually Larry's podcast that we were on Wednesday afternoon. And I will give you a heads up that unfortunately someone does not sound quite so good on this podcast, and it's me. For some reason, the recording got Larry just fine, and it got Ren just fine, but me, I sound like I'm really, really far away, and so I'm going to apologize. I've tried to boost it in post-production as best as I could so you can kind of understand what I'm saying. But let's face it, you want to hear Ren, you want to hear Larry, that is for sure. So we are going to get right into it right now and bring it in and get started with Larry Dyer from Bears Talk Underground.
Week number 7 has my beloved Chicago Bears heading out to Tampa to take on the defending world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And after our performance against Green Bay on Sunday, I am dreading that more than I was before. And joining me on this week's episode to help preview this game between the Bears and the Bucks, from the PewterCast, our good friend Ren Dax and his new co-host Steve. What's going on, guys?
Hey, Larry. How are you, buddy?
I'm glad to be here as always. Thanks, Larry. Can anybody put me in touch with Aaron Rodgers? Because I definitely want to buy stock in the Bears.
Yes. Yeah. It's... You know what, man? It's been an interesting couple of days since the game. I was especially pissed off at the end of it, because we had a moment that we don't usually have in those Packer games, where in the fourth quarter we're down 17-7, we're driving, we score a touchdown on a really nice run from our rookie running back Khalil Herbert. We get called for a holding penalty. Replay shows there was no hold. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those plays that in the past would have been a backbreaker. Like, at best, we would have settled for a field goal after that and still been down 7 and all that kind of stuff. But instead, we persevere. 3-4 plays later, Fields throws a touchdown to Mooney. So it's like, okay, so this doesn't usually happen in this situation. Now we're down 3. All we need is for our defense, that has played well all day, to get another stop, to see if we can get a field goal to send this thing to overtime, or may God forbid even a touchdown to win this thing. And the defense picked that moment to have its typical Packer game collapse, where Jalen Johnson, who is our best cover corner, decides he doesn't want to cover Davante Adams anymore, lets him free for a 40-yard gain. And then a couple of plays later, Rodgers goes running in to the end zone and has his I still own you moment, which I'm hoping and praying that in 8 weeks when we play him again on Sunday Night Football, he will dread ever having said that and giving the Bears the bulletin board material that we get to stare at for the next 2 months before we get to play him again. So If there is karma in the world that exists, I'm hoping that it comes back on him on that night in Lambeau in front of those 80,000 idiots.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. So, but you guys are 5-1. Tell me, is this a, because I look at the scores and I see you beating up on the bad teams and getting by everybody else. Well, mm-hmm. So how are we feeling about 5-1? Because the one really quote unquote great team you played, you lost to. I mean, you can talk about the Cowboys because they're 5-1 as well. The only blemish is to you guys. But how are you feeling about the season so far,
Steve?
You know, I think that we've learned here in Tampa over the years. Bren's been down here a lot longer than I have. I've been down here since 2003. You don't look 5-1, get 5-1 in the mouth. You're extremely happy where you are. These teams are on your schedule, and as the great Bill Russell once said, they're on our schedule. We got to play these games. We might as well win them. And so I look at being 5-1 and where this team is, and yes, they have not played Carolina. They have beat up on the Falcons pretty badly. They really had last week's game against Philadelphia in hand until the fourth quarter. Like that was going to be 45-20 if they keep their foot on the accelerator. I'm okay with. I'm certainly very happy with being 5-1 and being on top of the division. I look at, are there things that this team needs to fix? Absolutely. Are there big problems that this team has? There's no doubt. But I think that there are problems with just every team in the NFL. And the question becomes, can they do enough to fix these before every Sunday to keep winning? And I think that there's no doubt that they can.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of right there with, Carney, like, or 5-1, like, what, like, you know, you lost to the good team and you barely beat the others. Okay. 5-1. This offense is going to be able to keep us in any game. You know, we're a good team. There's other good teams out there. Are the Bucs the best team in the league? Some weeks looks like they are. Some weeks you're like, no, not even close. And it's mostly because of defense, but I'm sure we'll get into it later. Like, you know, our top three corners are down. Our top four corners are down. Actually, Jamel Dean's back. So, you know, three of our top four corners are down. At one point, you know, Dean missed time too. So I, as a fan, have just been looking at all of these games, you know, sort of like after week one, where the first cornerback went down and has Sean Murphy Bunting has been back yet, is sort of just a survive in advance. Like, it's kind of hard to look at the Bucs' second, the defense, and especially the secondary, where all three corners have missed games and we're going on possible week two of the start of one of those two starting safeties missing 2 weeks in a row. So four of your five guys back there have missed games. Most of them have missed multiple games. Some of them have missed all games except for like two quarters. So right now it's survive in advance and, you know, just keep rolling and hopefully get all these guys back. Then we can start sort of being worried if, you know, if the defense is giving up too much yardage or too many points or all that kind of stuff. But offensively, the Bucs are just rolling along.
Right. And the reason that I asked is because a week ago I was asking my Packers guest, you know, they come in 4-1, but this is not the most impressive 4-1 team the Packers have brought to Soldier Field.
Right.
Or usually there was some weight behind the record, but they were a defensive stop in San Francisco and that kid in Cincinnati making a field goal in overtime from coming into Soldier Field at 2-3 instead of 4-1, you know, needing to beat us to be 500 instead of adding another victory to their win total. You know, it's a completely different situation that we're looking at going into that game. If those two things don't go their way, they could legitimately be 2-3 at this point instead of 4-1 and being on top of the division. And so that's why I was kind of checking the temperature on it, because I see, you know, the close win in New England, which I think even you guys probably thought was going to be close, because Belichick, 20 years with Brady, he probably knows how to slow that guy down a little bit, not to mention that Belichick is a genius and can figure these things out. Anyway, I think the important thing was just getting the win in New England. But, you know, you have the loss in Los Angeles, and then the, you know, taking the, like, as you said, taking the foot off the gas against the Eagles on the Thursday night game, just wondering, you know, if 5-1 felt as good as it looked, or if it was just like, well, there's some things that, you know, maybe we could be 4-2 right now, or, you know, that kind of thing.
It feels fantastic.
We're not gonna as a Bucks fan, like, we've been 5-1 like twice in 40 plus years. So yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, like, I'll like the Washington, what was it, when Gus Frerotte was the quarterback for the the Washington football team.
Sure.
And they were like 8-0, you know, and everyone was telling them that they were frauds, and they ended up being frauds. But, you know, as a Washington football fan, I'll take 8-0. Like, we don't have that luxury or sort of that cachet or that callousness of, you know, we don't expect to make the playoffs every year.
Right.
You know, so when a team, you know, is like, I don't know, say like 5-4, you know, like, we're still really happy with 5-4 because the season's not over yet. I can't tell you how many seasons are over, you know, by the start of November. Like, this next week, the season would be over. Like, you know, yeah, we'd be 1-6 or
like
2-5. Yeah, and before that, Leland Bennett.
I forgot that was a thing. Oh my God, Greg Schiano. Yeah, you guys took a chance on him. That was a thing, wasn't it?
I think Shiano's a really good coach. I think he's a turd of a person, and no one likes him.
Right.
And so that makes it hard to be in a position of leadership when no one around you likes you.
Let's put it this way. When you're making Kellen Winslow the second seem like a sympathetic creature, you know you're in rough shape.
Yeah, that's probably a good indicator right there. So... So, I mean, let's talk about this offense that I'm dreading facing, even though the defense is the better of the two units that we have on our squad. Watching them, you know, rack up the points. I mean, aside from the New England game, 28 is the least amount of points you've scored in a football game, in a winning, and even in a losing effort, you score 24. So, yeah, the offense is going to get its points, and that's worrisome for me. Because my offense doesn't. We are currently last in the NFL in points per game, and we're near the bottom. We're the worst passing team in football, despite having like the ninth best rushing attack in the league, which is usually the other way around. Like, we throw better than we run. Well, we figured out how to run the ball this year, but even with the dynamic Justin Fields at quarterback, we're not really trying very much to throw the ball down the field. Is like, what is it because they've been together this offseason as opposed to learning on the fly a year ago that they kind of hit the ground running offensively this year?
I'll start on this one. Yeah, that's pretty much it. A little bit of continuity. You know, after the Super Bowl, of course, as Buck fans, we consumed almost everything that came out, you know, on all the networks or from the Buccaneers itself and this and that and all the press conferences and trying to find Bruce Arians talk everywhere. At one point during the offseason, he said, you know, like, Tom, like, even at 7-5 in the bye week, Bucks came out and didn't lose a game after that. Like, Tom Brady still didn't, like, know the plays, you know. He was still, like, had to look at the wristband, and not because he wanted to get the call right, is because he had to, you know, switch all those. He was still switching all the New England language to the Buck language in his head, and... You know, Antonio Brown had only been there like 2 weeks. Gronk, you know, was not in Gronk shape by the time he was at the end of the year. You know, it's all those things. But the easiest thing to point at, because I think the Bucs scored over 30 points every game after the bye week. So they were like 8 in a row, scored 30 in Dallas. It was like 9-10 in a row where they'd scored 30-plus points. And it's just continuity, getting guys on the same page. Leonard Fournette going from, you know, being cut to being, you know, a really big piece. The offense is not, that's a big part of it. But it all comes down, you know, to the roster that the GM Jason Light built, and it's just Tom Brady. You know, it's not his football IQ, and it's not, you know, his leadership, and it's not his, you know, arm and you know, experience. It's all experience. It's all that, but situational football, I think he understands sort of more than almost any quarterback out there. Like, he is never ever gonna put the team in a bad spot because he made a poor decision on the field. Like, interception, okay, yes, but I mean, you know, like, he's not gonna go somewhere with the ball he's not supposed to if that ends up hurting the team. It's just when you watch it game after game after game, you kind of understand it. It's like he doesn't make a bad decision out there, and that's really what's, you know, keeps drives alive, keeps the team's head of the chain, and being able to even overcome mistakes or penalties like that. It's his sort of football acumen, if you will.
Well, I mean, and I seeing, you know, film over the years, NFL films and stuff, whenever Belichick is allowed films in practice and stuff, over and over hear him emphasizing situational football and this situation or that one and so on and so forth. So that's been pounded in his head for the first two decades of his career. And he's just doing it all over again in Tampa Bay because he knows that's what works, you know. Mm-hmm. I also think the guy's a great leader in the things that I've seen, the way he talks to his teammates on the sidelines and stuff like that. And his track record speaks for itself. As much as I've wanted to, over the years, deny that Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time, I can't argue against it because the guy's got a resume that's going to be unmatched probably till long after we're off this planet. So it's just the success that guy's had and how often he's been to the Super Bowl is unprecedented. And I just, you know, so the fact that he came to Tampa Bay and kind of hit the ground running, as far as he's right back where he was when he was with New England, didn't really come as too great of a surprise. It was just more about like, yeah, well, he did it again, I guess, as opposed to just being surprised about it. It's like, yeah, that checks because the guy just wins and that's all he's done since he took over in New England.
It certainly doesn't hurt Brady that, you know, when he left New England, you saw, you know, the sort of weapons that he had with the Patriots, as opposed to what he's got with the Buccaneers, with, you know, Mike Evans, his 7 straight 1,000-yard seasons, and Chris Godwin made Pro Bowl, and they bring Gronk in to go along with the first-round pick in O.J. Howard, and a guy in Cameron Brate, who is, you know, been a really good receiving tight end here, and a guy that has been the relief valve for a number of quarterbacks, not just Tom, but all of these weapons that he has on offense certainly makes a 44-year-old quarterback a lot more at ease, that he knows that he's going to have somebody at least that he's going to be able to throw to at some point.
Yeah, we got to figure out what Giselle's putting in the water as well, because I know that there's the TB12 program, whatever. But, you know, the fact that he's in his mid-40s and he's still playing. He's not playing like he's in his mid-40s. He might feel like it after a Sunday, but he doesn't play like he's in his mid-40s or anything like that. I need to figure out what fountain of youth she is pumping into him that is still legal and not getting busted by the NFL, where he can keep going on like this, where him playing until 50 looks like a legitimate thing right now.
Yeah, I think he said recently that he thinks he could play as long as he wants to play.
Yeah.
Like, he truly believes, like, if I want to play to 50, I can play to 50. I want to play to 53, I think I can play to 53. Like, and, you know, I haven't looked a lot into it, but it's sleep, hydration, probiotics, and pliability are sort of the pillars that thing's built on, the TB12 method is built on. So start there, everybody.
Take heed, kids. So let's talk about that Rams game. That's the one loss on the schedule so far. Mm-hmm. And so what was it that the Rams did? What code did they crack that nobody before or after was able to do?
Oh, the defense didn't just show up. I mean, if you go and look at that game, you know, the Rams did a little the way teams, and you saw it, you know, in week one with Dallas on, you know, opening game, I guess, for the NFL season, was Dallas got the ball on the edges quickly. Now, that was pioneered by the Rams last year in a primetime game in Tampa. I think the Rams ran the ball 6 times total that game. Ended up winning. Then Dallas trying to copycat that. Ended up losing, but still put up, you know, plus 30 against the Buccaneers. And we're winning late, very, very late in the game. So we thought the Rams were going to do that. But then they started with attacking the middle of the field a little bit with crosses and things like that. And the defense just had no answer for them. But when both teams sort of started to settle in, because it was kind of like three and outs, one first down punt, kind of like the first three or four possessions for each team there for a while, excluding the when the Bucks had the ball and they ran out of time because of halftime, excluding that, the team scored seven of the next eight times they touched the ball. And the teams combined scored eight times in a row, and seven of those were touchdowns. So it was just, you know, like the Bucks scored a touchdown, Rams scored a touchdown. Bucks scored a touchdown, Rams scored a touchdown. Bucks kicked a field goal, Rams scored a touchdown. Bucks three and out, Rams scored a touchdown. You look up, it's halfway through the fourth quarter, and now you're down by 10 because you had a one time you didn't score, and the other time you scored, you only got three instead of seven. So that's right. The kind of game it was, you know.
It's like hockey, a little bit, you know. There was no defense played on either side. The two guys just stood in the middle of the ring, Rocky and Apollo Creed, and they just slugged each other in the face as hard as they could. So,
yeah. You know, that's a thought that I have when I watch those movies. Like, if real boxing was like this, never sell enough seats. There would never be enough pay-per-view buys if these two guys stood in the middle of the ring and hit each other with every punch. It would be, I wouldn't miss a fight. I wouldn't miss one. If they just stand there and make contact after another and keep coming after one another, you wouldn't miss a fight. You wouldn't miss one. Instead, you get, you know, Fury and Wilder hugging and leaning on each other for a few rounds, and somebody
running away.
Yeah, you know, somebody throws a punch every once in a while that might land, and when they do, they're so surprised they get hit, they go down. So it's you know, big deal. So the Rams just the Rams mixed it up, and then it just kind of became a Madden game, like who had the ball last was going to win type thing.
No, because about the time, you know, where, you know, somewhere around the 10-minute mark to 8-minute mark, as a fan, you start to look at the game of the fourth quarter and you start counting possessions and start going, okay, this is what has to happen. And right around there, I think I said to myself, okay, the Bucks need to stop. And they didn't. And it put the Rams up by double digits. It might have been like 15 or something, where I was going to be like, oh, God, it's got to be two touchdowns and, you know, and somewhere we got to get a 2-point conversion. And the Bucks came out next time and didn't score and had to punt. Now, there's still 8 minutes left in the game, but, okay, the defense has to stop the Rams, which they haven't done since, you know, 5 minutes in the first quarter, and then we have to score three times in a row or something, you know, without the Rams getting anything. And, it didn't happen. It was just one of those things where it's like no one's stopping anybody. Basically, the Bucks offense blinked first. It was like a race to 40. Okay. And the Rams won.
Right. Right. That's interesting. So with the defense, because that was basically what won you the Super Bowl, especially in the Super Bowl itself, was the defense. Even though it was Brady that brought home the MVP trophy, if you could give the MVP trophy to an entire unit of the team, the defense holding Mahomes and company to 9 points and having him run for his life for 90% of the game would be far more valuable than what Brady did on the offensive side of the field that night. But now it's not quite living up to that so far this year.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do on the pass side has to do with injury. You look at it, and Ren mentioned it. You've got, you know, we've spent time with your three top cornerbacks out, and right now you've got three of your top four, including the guy that you had to sign off the street in Richard Sherman, who got
right
2 days of or 3 days of practice before the New England game in order to get ready. But then, you know, ended up getting hurt in the Philadelphia game. So he's down. Carlton Davis is down. Sean Murphy Bunting has the dislocated elbow. And, you know, who knows if we're going to see, you know, when we're going to see him next. So You've got guys like D. Delaney and Pierre Desir that are having to play on the opposite end of Jamel Dean. And then on top of that, you know, Antoine Winfield, who has been, you know, was fantastic in the Super Bowl and the second half of the last season, is still in concussion protocol. And Bruce Arians has said he's not sure, you know, if he's going to be ready to go here for this game either. So if he doesn't clear concussion protocol, you know, obviously he's not going to play either. And so now you've got backups on top of backups everywhere in the defensive secondary. And that, of course, will allow teams to want to throw the football. Obviously, the run defense has still been fantastic for the Bucs, but teams have learned that, you know, if you have to be one-dimensional against the Bucs, it's not a bad thing because they've got backups everywhere in the secondary.
Well, I thought that might have been a strategy that could have worked for us last week because the Packers were in a very similar situation with their secondary, and we scored 14 points. So I can't lean on that as a positive for us going forward because we had it. We had the exact same thing last week, and it didn't work for us. So as much as I would like for that to bring me joy and give me some optimism that we might actually be able to crack 20 against you guys, I just watched it not work against a team not as good as you guys. So forgive me if my pessimism won't allow me to be like, oh, well, there's something, you know, because we had that this week and we were at home at the same time, and it also did not work for us. So, but everything is good with the pass rush?
Well, you know, it has improved a lot, probably since like week three. You know, Dallas put up a lot of points. The Rams put up a lot of points. Atlanta even put up a lot of points. It was like 22-25 at one point. But, you know, we had the Philly game on Thursday night where the game was completely in hand, 14 points, and then, you know, another, you know, I don't know, it was a pass interference or just, you know, some other play that Philly finally got the ball on our side of the field and punched it in and went for two, and all of a sudden, oh, geez, this is a game. And then Tom Brady just took the ball, you know, like blew off 8 minutes in the fourth quarter, and we're downing inside the 5-yard line three times. So, but before that, you know, the past two games, the Bucs only let up 17 points, you know, and as fans, you kind of like, oh my God, like, why is that guy open? Or, you know, like, why is, you know, Sam Darnold throwing 324 yards against us? We're terrible. But you look up at the end of the day, you're only giving up 17 points, and you should win, like, all those games. Like, if your defense only gives up 17 points as an NFL team, you should win all those games. So that's what the defense been doing sort of in the latter half, and it is true they've been playing not the, you know, the better teams, but like Steve said, like, they're on your schedule, might as well win. But to the pass rush started out slow, sort of answer your question there. The pass rush started out slow, and I think they were tied for the league low after two games, and since then, you know, from two games on, they're tied for the league lead in sacks. Shaq Barrett was all over the place Thursday night. We're very happy. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Sue's still there. Vita's still there. Vita Vea recorded, I think he got a sack and a half now. That might match his career total. As far as he had, like, his first few years in the league, the head coach, B.A., came out and sort of, you know, didn't really throw him under the bus to the media, but told me, he was like, hey, like, yes, Vita Vea can pick anybody up and throw him around and toss him around. Now we need him to start getting some sacks. And so he's responded with a sack and a half in the past couple of games. And then our rookie that we drafted, 32nd, Joe Tryon Scherinka. He was a huge surprise. What he came to camp with as sort of his toolkit for pass rush moves was much deeper than anything he showed at Washington. And he's playing sparingly, but he's explosive, he's fast, and he's already got a really nice array of moves very early on in his NFL career. So, yeah, the pass rush is there.
Okay. So on our side of things, you guys might be able to rest easy this weekend because Robert Quinn is now in COVID protocols. And Robert Quinn is on track to be comeback player of the year with 5.5 sacks, which is almost triple the amount of sacks he had in 15 starts last year. Right. So he's averaging like a sack a game for the first 5-6 games of the season, including one against Green Bay on Sunday. And he's been a revelation, probably the best player we have on defense right now. And it's the defense, by the way, that's got Khalil Mack in it. Right. So, the fact that he might miss the game on Sunday, and it'll be back to the same old Bears defense where as long as you isolate Khalil Mack, you're in pretty good shape to do pretty much whatever you want on that side of the ball. But so it has me worried about what we're going to be able to do on the defensive side with the secondary being the liability that it's been and missing our other key pass rusher on the other side, which has become a pick your poison kind of thing. Because you can't double them both, because then you'll leave the middle open for animals like Bilal Nichols and Eddie Goldman. And we still don't know what's going on with Akeem Hicks and the re-injured groin and everything. But it's just it definitely limits our options, even with whatever Sean Desai's been able to do with this with mixing things up as our new defensive coordinator. But taking Robert Quinn out leaves a big hole on our defensive side. So. I wonder how effective we'll be if Quinn doesn't play on Sunday. I'm far more worried about that than I am about any other thing that we have going on with the defense
now. I'm curious, Larry, about the middle of the line, or I should say in the middle of the defense, the inside linebackers and the safeties, because I'm assuming that Brady's going to want to try and get. He did this against Philadelphia last week, getting O.J. Howard involved early and getting Cameron Brate involved late against the middle of the defense. So I know you got Ogletree, Roquan Smith, and Trevathan is there. Give me a thought on the middle of that. What do you see from that?
Well, the thing that worries me is always going to be the passing game. We're vulnerable in the middle. I mean, if you saw what happened to us against the Rams on Sunday Night Football, I know that those land mostly on our nickel guy and the safeties in this one. But there are also some plays in that game where the tight end is catching the ball on a crossing route, and who's running behind him but Roquan or Ogletree, because that was the guy that they were supposed to be covering. They're not that big of a liability in pass coverage, but when they get beat, they get beat bad. And you guys have some decent horses as far as pass catchers at the tight end position. So that's something that you could probably hurt us pretty good with in the game on Sunday. So, and then I don't know what happened to Eddie Jackson. I was just kind of talking to myself about it earlier today with, I was like, he hasn't been Eddie Jackson since Fangio left, which also coincided with when we lost Adrian Amos in free agency. So the choices about Eddie Jackson right now are he was never that good because after he lost Fangio, and he was never that good, and Fangio and Amos were covering it or putting him in the best position to be Eddie Jackson, or he can't succeed without them now that they're gone. They've been gone since 2019, and he was the star of the defense, 5-6 interceptions in 2018, 3 or 4 the year before that. This guy was on a trajectory to be a perennial All-Pro and Hall of Fame player. And since 2019, he has a total of 2 interceptions, maybe 3, and 0 last year in 2020. So maybe he got 1 or 2 in 2019. It hasn't done a thing since then. And, oh, yeah, we extended him for 4 years and $66 million since Fangio left. So we're stuck with him.
That's got to feel good.
Yeah, feels great. Feels great. For the guy to deserve the contract extension and then do nothing to earn it since then. So it's been awesome. And, he's subjected himself to throwing barbs back at guys that are criticizing him, because Lance Briggs kind of gave it to him on the postgame show this weekend, because the throw to Davante Adams that ended up being a huge 40-yard gain could have been a 60-plus-yard touchdown because Eddie Jackson was the last line of defense between Adams and the end zone. And instead of wrapping him up and taking him down, he tried to put in one of those highlight reels where he knocks him down. And it just kind of pushed Devontae off to the side just enough that his right pinky toe was out of bounds. Otherwise, like the play ran, like he went in and for a touchdown. They had to go back on replay and take it back to the 22-yard line.
I saw that, yeah.
So, but it was like Eddie Jackson missed on that play. In the Cleveland game against the Browns, he was the last line of defense between him and Kareem Hunt which was the backbreaker of the it was 13-6 going into the fourth quarter. Three plays into the fourth quarter, Eddie Jackson comes in like a bat out of hell with his head down, and all Kareem Hunt had to do was take one step to the inside, Olay Eddie Jackson into a pile of people on the sidelines, and run in untouched for a 29-yard touchdown. So it's like he's been doing that more often than not for the last couple of seasons
and
now.
And then he gets all worked up about people criticizing. You know, that sounds like someone that we used to have here in Tampa. Isn't that right, Ren? Guy used to tell everybody to check their sheet.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Gerald McCoy.
No, I wasn't talking about Gerald McCoy. Although Joe McCoy could be just as grumpy at times. But
sensitive. Yes, very sensitive. Big very, sensitive very baby. Sensitive.
But no, I was talking about someone else that used to tell people in press conferences that they need to check their
sheet. Yeah, I don't talk about that guy anymore. I could give two shits.
He's not playing quarterback in New Orleans.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, yeah. He used to talk about how great he was and how, you know, nothing was his fault. And he used to be like, what about this? He's like, you better check your sheet. It's like,
oh, like, those are guys that you love talking to those guys. They're so much fun. Yeah. To tell me I'm wrong all the time, even though I have all the facts right here in front of me. Okay. All right, buddy.
Yeah. Yes.
And we will get back to our conversation here in just a moment after we give you a word from our sponsors at BetUS.com. For 27 years, BetUS has been paying out its customers on all of its wagers. And with the NFL and college football now in full swing, and the NHL and the NBA now starting up as well, you can bet on games across the sporting world. Plus, at BetUS.com, you can also wager on UFC matchups. You can also wager on PGA golf. And of course, Ren's favorite, the ponies. And you can do so with a sign-up bonus thanks to your friends here at the PewterCast. Go to betus.com and use the promo code Pewter with the letter C and the number 125. That'll get you a 125% sign-up bonus. So if you sign up at betus.com and use the promo code PewterC125, you would deposit $100. You get $125 in additional sign-up bonus money. So you've got $225 to spend and wager with. It's a great time. Ren is very good at it. I am less so, but I am certainly enjoying myself and learning a ton about it. So go to BetUS.com. Again, use the promo code PewterC125 and get a 125% sign-up bonus. If you like cryptocurrency, if you're a crypto head, Bitcoin fan, Ethereum, you can always go and use the promo code PewterC with the number 200 and get a 200% sign-up bonus when you use cryptocurrency. BetUS.com. You bet, you win, you get paid at BetUS.com. It's the best way to support this podcast. Again, BetUS.com. Use the promo code Pewter, the letter C, and the number 125.
Well, since you're sort of talking about Chicago, let's sort of flip the script here on this pod right now and ask you a few questions. Andy Dalton's out. Justin Fields had to wait a few weeks. Here he is. He's had a few games under his belt. He's won some games. Mm-hmm. So where are you with him? Because an outsider looking in, sort of like the explosiveness from the runs, his legs, it just seems not to be happening. And I personally feel that he's a little more inaccurate than I expected, watching what he did in college. But then it's Ohio State, and you know, they've got 37 yards of separation every time he throws the ball. So so anyway, where are you and Bears fans on Justin Fields extremely early in his career?
Well, I think we're happy with him right now. What you just described was basically like if the Green Bay game, if you watch that, if that's all you have to go on, then yeah, that's pretty accurate with what he put on the field this past Sunday. He was off target on some throws. I feel like he was, it was something that I talked about on my review episode, was that I feel like maybe he saw something in film study during the week, like other quarterbacks having like the secondary or the second level leaving the middle of the field open, because he felt much more apt to to take the ball in and take it off running with it than he did waiting for the receivers to get open, because the Packers were coming after him, but they weren't so overwhelming that he, you know, he had to run. I think it was more of an, you know, an instinct or something that he was trying to act on, because I felt like he was running sooner than he needed to in a lot of situations in this game against the Packers. So I just assume that it has to be something that he saw on film, that he's trying to take advantage of something that they, that he saw, that they talked about it. Like, you know, they're telling him, if you see this and you have a lane to run, then go ahead and run. And he just wasn't able to turn that into much on Sunday. But in the other previous games, the throws that he's making, it's like a revelation to us as Bear fans, because we're coming off of Mitch, who couldn't hit the outside of a barn. You know, I mean, our guy could be wide open. We talk about how many plays did we leave on the field? How many points did we leave on the field? And because he missed this guy that was wide open, he, you know, Anthony Miller was wide open for a touchdown. He threw it 5 yards over his head. Or there was this key third down, and he launched it over the guy's head, as opposed to where Justin Fields put it, where only Allen Robinson could catch it. There was a 3rd-and-12 throw that he made against the Raiders, where there were two defenders closing in on Darnell Mooney. He puts it where only Mooney can catch it, and we got 13 yards on 3rd-and-12. That pretty much iced the game for the Bears. So, I mean, those are the things that we're seeing from him, the flashes that shows that, you know, he's still learning. He still gives us those rookie moments. He's not an interception machine, thank God. But, you know, he does have his rookie moments where he misses this or he missed the read. And, you know, he ran when he should have thrown. He threw it. He holds on to the ball a little too long. I think that's some of that Ohio State, freedom that he had.
The pocket will never collapse. Yeah,
he will sit back there for 12 seconds, and he can wait for Olave to, you know, to get 48 yards of separation and be wide open down the middle of the field and things like that. You can't do that in the NFL.
Is Ryan Pace now out of the doghouse? Because every time I talk to somebody from Chicago, when it was, you know, Cutler and the soul-crushing interceptions and trading all that capital to move up to take Trubisky, you know, I've heard so many people say that, you know, Ryan Pace should be, you know, tarred, feathered, and run out of town on a rail, which is perfect in Chicago, the rail capital of the world. You know, what's the fan base's feelings on Ryan Pace right now in the front office?
It's mixed at best, And the more general opinion is that he should be out the door with Nagy. Most Bear fans didn't want him to come back this year. They wanted him. We wanted them both gone, which is why that disaster of a press conference, if you know anything about it, that they had to sum up the year. They summed it up by saying first that everybody was staying put, from Ted Phillips to Nagy to Ryan Pace. So everybody that contributed to the disaster of a season that we had, that had a 6-game middle winning streak. I mean, you guys were talking earlier about not looking 5-1 in the mouth. Well, we were pretty much trying to do that last year. We were 5-1 at the end of 6 games last year, and then we didn't win a game for 2 months after that, because we lost 6 straight, and then we had a bye week there in the middle as well. So we went 2 calendar months before we won a football game, and we went on a 3-game winning streak against the Vikings, the Texans, and the Jaguars. And that was good enough to get us into the playoffs, where we got our asses handed to us by the New Orleans Saints. So, you know, the last thing that we wanted to hear was that they were coming back again and that Ryan Pace was going to get a third shot at a quarterback, because he had Jay Cutler, traded for Trubisky, you know, signed Mike Glennon, traded for Nick Foles last year. You know, this was going to be number 3. And the other thing was, because we made the playoffs, we were drafting at 20. So in order to get anybody worth having, we were going to have to trade up with draft assets we didn't have, or we were going to just trade away our future to get a chance with somebody. And where the mixed feelings come in is that we made our trade on draft day to go from 20 to 11 with the Giants, and he somehow made Dave Gettleman happy with 1 first round pick and a 4th rounder next year. It's like, that's when the elation over getting Justin Fields began, was that we got our quarterback of the future, and it didn't cost us our future in order to do it. It's like, genius, by Ryan Pace, because not only do we only give up one first round pick, we still have our second and third round picks tomorrow to be able to use to build this roster up. And he used that to trade up for Tevin Jenkins, who hasn't played a down because he had back surgery in training camp. So there's your mixture. Jordan, why do I want to call him Jordan all of a sudden? Justin Fields is, you know, is our starting quarterback. And he looks like there's just something extremely different about this kid. And just the vibe that he has, the things that he's doing on the field, we haven't seen in Chicago before. But then your second round pick, who's supposed to be our future left tackle, cornerstone of the offensive line, who had back problems in college, suffered a back injury in training camp, and probably won't play this year. So there's your mixed bag there. And also, throughout his tenure as our general manager, Roquan Smith and maybe Justin Fields, as you know, as time will tell, are his success stories at first round picks. But otherwise, you have Kevin White, you have Leonard Floyd, you have you know, Trubisky, and then no first round pick in 2019 or 2020 because that was the Khalil Mack trade. All of his success stories have come in the later rounds. Jordan Howard, fifth round pick, Tariq Cohen, fourth round pick, Eddie Jackson, fourth round pick, Bilal Nichols, fifth round pick, Travis Gibson, who will probably be playing in Robert Quinn's spot if he's not healthy enough to go, fifth round pick a year ago. So if it's day three and Ryan Pace is picking, pretty good chance you're going to get a player out of that deal. Khalil Herbert, who's going to be our starting running back on Sunday, sixth round pick this year. But first, second, third round, it is an absolute crapshoot as far as Ryan Pace making the picks. So, and his free agency things, it's he's the guy that brought in Akeem Hicks. He's also the guy who signed Robert Quinn, and then he got two sacks last year. Until Robert Quinn turned that around, that looked like we gave this guy $70 million, and he got us two sacks in 15 starts last year. So he's missed just as much as he's made, which I guess is the story for most general managers. But, you know, it's likely that they'll throw the baby out with the bathwater. If they throw out Nagy, he goes with him too.
Well, let's go ahead and finish up the offense, and then, you know, we'll jump back to treating it like it's actually your show. Coming up on Sunday, like, you got Anthony Miller, and that's about it. Like, you talk about this running back you got, I don't know who he is. I don't know how your offensive line is doing, if it's banged up, if, you know, you're really happy with the offensive line. I really don't know who the other receivers are. Like, yeah. You know, like, who am I going to, as a Bucs fan, I sit down and watch this game. By the time the game's over, who am I going to know off the Chicago offense by, you know, by the fourth?
Well, Anthony Miller's not on the team
anymore. Oh, well, there you go. I'm sorry.
There's another second-round failure by Ryan Pace. I believe you were talking about Allen Robinson.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Allen
Robinson. That's our guy, who's been a virtual non-factor so far this year, which is always great when you're paying the guy $17.8 million on the franchise tag. Darnell Mooney is probably a name you'll be more familiar with by the end of the game on Sunday. He is also another Ryan Pace day three success story, a fifth round pick from last year that became our number two receiver almost immediately, which says a lot of great things about Darnell Mooney and a lot of bad things about the rest of our wide receiving core, that this fifth round pick that weighs 160 pounds soaking wet can emerge as the second best receiver in training camp against guys who've been in the system 3 and 4 years, like Anthony Miller, who's no longer on the team, like Javon Wims, who's no longer on the team.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you. What the hell happened with Anthony? He's a kid from Memphis, right?
I believe it was Memphis, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that guy was, like, what happened to him?
I don't know, man. I don't know if it was just the pressure getting to him, because he's...
Was he just not good?
No, that's the thing, is that he was, I called him over and over again last year. He's the most schizophrenic guy we have on the team. Okay. The most schizophrenic guy, because he can make, like, week one last year against Detroit, he makes a dime of a touchdown catch to win the game against Detroit. Then the following week, week two, he drops a key third down that would have extended a drive in a close game, and then drops a touchdown pass that went right through his hands in the end zone. Then he comes back week three against Atlanta. He makes the game-winning touchdown grab. And then you don't hear from him for weeks at a time. He's on the field. You see him out there, but he's not doing anything. No catches. He's not getting open, that kind of thing. And then, oh, Anthony Miller had 5 catches for 60 yards today. How about that? He did something. You know, you could go on Twitter during a Bears game and see tweets like, Anthony Miller sighting everyone. There he is. You know, he's still on the team. You know, and things like that. So that's what happened with Anthony Miller. It was just he was going into the last year of his rookie deal, and the Bears were just sick of him. I mean, this is also the idiot who decided to throw a punch at what's his name from Gardner Johnson at Cincinnati.
But who doesn't want to punch that guy?
Well, I mean, it happened. What the thing about it, though, man, is that it happened during the regular season. Yeah. It was Stephon Wims who decided he wanted to throw a punch in the middle of the field in front of everybody. It's not like he tried to sneak him when they're under the pile and he's punching him in the face mask. He openly, like, he, number one, he ripped the mouthpiece off his face mask.
Because that's what Gardner Phillips does. He was, that was his thing last year. He was freaking yanking people's mouthpieces out of their mouths and throwing them on the ground.
Yeah. So he does that. And so they had that. And then you go into the wild card game and they were emphasizing, do not let 22 get in your head. You saw what happened to Javon Wims. He was suspended for 2 games for what he did. Lucky to still be on the team. And then Anthony Miller does the exact same thing to the exact same guy, gets ejected in a playoff game.
That's true.
So he was done after that. He was done after that. But to get back to your question, you know, we have Darnell Mooney. He's probably the best receiver that we have on the team right now. Despite everyone telling you it's Allen Robinson, it's not. I am so low on Allen Robinson, it's not even funny. Cole Kmet, we have is our second year tight end. Kind of really made his first appearance last week against the Packers. 4 catches, 49 yards, his best performance of the year so far. But he was a slow starter last year. They're kind of working him back into it. Now that Nagy's not calling the plays anymore, we might actually start using our tight ends in the offense. And then, you know, we have Jimmy Graham, believe it or not. He's still on the team.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then in the running game, I don't know if we're getting Damian Williams back this week. He was on COVID. That's why he missed the Green Bay game. But right. Khalil Herbert, that's the 6th-round pick I was talking about. 19 carries, 94 yards, and a touchdown against the Packers last week in his first start. 60-something yards on like 14 carries against the Raiders the week before. Splitting carries with Williams. He's getting it done. And our offensive line, I praise them for being as good as they've been in the running game. We've got a 95-year-old Jason Peters playing left tackle for us. Right. Our right tackle is now Elijah Wilkerson, who we signed in free agency to be a backup from the Broncos because Jermaine Afidi went down against the Raiders. He's on IR for the next few weeks with a knee injury. And then our interior is intact, but it's there are liabilities at center. Sam Mustafa. I don't know if it's because he's not big enough, he's not strong enough, he's not using the proper technique. He gets beat up a lot, which is why I'm not looking forward to him going up.
God, Vita Bay is going to swallow that guy whole. Yeah.
So, you know, that's what that was worries about me is that matchup there. But Cody Whitehair, James Daniels, our guards, that's the strength of the offensive line right there. But it's like they've got, as far as pass coverage, the liabilities are on the outside. As far as the running game, the liabilities on the inside. Because he's letting people through that can get after our running backs in the middle.
Are you running the ball then? Are you, because the way I look at the NFL nowadays, like the sweep and the toss pitch, all that stuff is out the window. The linebackers are just too fast. Well, so you have to run everything being the tackles, but if you got a center who's getting eaten, like, so how's that working out?
Well, what I saw a lot of on Sunday against the Packers was those running plays where it looks like it's supposed to, like the play was probably designed to run to the right side, probably between the guard and the tackle, somewhere in that area. You find your 18 inches of, you know, daylight, you run through it. But what I saw a lot of Khalil Herbert doing was using his field vision, which he seems to have an excellent asset that he has, was Jason Peters using all 600 pounds of his body to cave down the defensive line, and then Khalil Herbert would just cut to the left and follow right behind Jason Peters, and there's 6 yards easy right there kind of thing. And then on the occasion where maybe it's where Daniels or Whitehair can cave down the nose tackle, there's your hole right there to be able to run through, but you got to get help from Mustafer to do that. And sometimes he just doesn't get the job done. So,
You mentioned that, you know, the Bears offense is last in passing this year.
32. Yep.
But, you know, you talked about how, you know, Herbert's had, you know, had some success in the running game. Yeah. You know, How is that offensive line so schizophrenic?
It's a great question. I mean, I don't understand how it can be so good at one thing and then so bad at the other. But I mean, it was an inconsistent unit for us last year as well, and something that would drive you crazy if you sat and tried to think about it, because they would have games where, like, oh, here comes the Vikings, which has, you know, Danielle Hunter and you know, the other guy on the other side, and we wall them off. We are the Great Wall of China. The Trubisky didn't get touched all day. And then we'll go up against this other team that has pass rushers that nobody's ever heard of before, since, or after, and everything. Five sacks. They're all of a sudden a swinging gate of an offensive line that gets murdered. We can run the ball for 180 yards against the team this week, and then we've got 35 yards on 28 carries the week after that. It's just, it was one of those things where this year we are way more consistent with our production in the running game. And as far as the passing game this year, I don't know if it's a volume thing, like we're just sticking with the run because that's what's working, which is odd for a Matt Nagy-led football team, because he's allergic to running the ball. It's just not something he wants to do. But with Bill Lazor calling the play, since Nagy surrendered play calling after the Cleveland disaster, we focus more on the running game. And if it's working, Lazor sticks with it. Because I think in his four games as a starter, Fields has thrown the ball 20 times, more than 20 times, once or twice maybe.
Yeah.
So it's, with the passing game, it's a volume thing. He threw for 209 yards against the Lions in his second start. And that's the most he's thrown for so far. So, and the only reason he threw for as much as he did this past week against the Packers is because we were down two scores and we had to throw the ball.
Right.
Because going into the fourth quarter, Khalil Herbert had more rushing yards than Justin Fields had passing yards going into the fourth quarter. So we're not throwing it enough, and we're also not throwing it downfield. So combined,
hard way to win.
Yeah. And there's your second ranked passing attack right there.
All right. Well, do you have some more questions for us? Let's throw it back to your show again.
Sure. I mean, I believe we're more capable of what we're doing. Like, I think the Lions game is what we're more capable of. We had some decent shots down the field. Darnell Mooney, five catches, 125 yards in that game. Mm-hmm. I think that's more, like, I think that's what we're capable of. We're just not, I don't know if we're not trying it or whatever the situation is, was there. But yeah. So, but back to you guys. What do I want to ask you now? We talked about the defense, talked about the offense. Anybody that's, because you brought everybody back, is anybody not performing the way they need to, or you know, anything, or has anybody been a surprise this season? Now that playoff Lenny is a full-time starter, is he better as a starter now than he was at a contributor a year ago, or what's the situation there?
Yeah, I touched at that a little bit about, and that's, you know, yes, the answer is absolutely yes. Like, he was an eyelash from getting cut,
right?
You know, late in the season last year. And it took him a few games, but I think it was mostly because what teams have decided to do against the Buccaneers offense, which is play dime and make them run the ball. Like, you know, like, you know, how that saying, like, you're making me buy it. Like, it's such a good deal. Like, you're making me buy this. And that's what teams are doing against the Bucs. They're like, you're making us run the ball. Like, there's only like six in the box. Like, you're making Tom Brady audible to the run, and he's handing it to Lenny, and Lenny's producing. And so that's kind of what's happened the past 3 weeks. Leonard Fournette has become a must start in fantasy football, which was completely laughable for, you know, most of his career, and especially his early on Buck career last year. So that would be the biggest surprise. Besides that, everyone's just doing, I mean, Steve might have a different answer, but I'm trying to go through my head here. It's like, no one's really dropped off, you know, the map as far as their playability. Where you could look the most inconsistent play would have been in the defensive backfield, but they're all hurt. So we don't have a sample size to sort of judge it on. So, yeah, you know, like Kappa the guard hasn't played as well as he played last year, but he's still not giving up sacks. He's just giving up one or two more pressures than you want to. But when he does, Brady, you know, has Antonio Brown somewhere one-on-one and anticipates the throw and it goes for a touchdown. So you're like, okay, well, I guess I'll let that slide. So there, you know, it's like Devin White still can't cover sometimes. The end. Like, that's it. It's just, it's just a very weird feeling as a fan to have really like no complaints. If you really kind of sit down and look at the whole picture, yes, the defense giving up all these yards, but you know, we're on our seventh and eighth corners out there and you're only giving up 17 points the past 3 weeks. So like, what are you crying about? So, right. Yeah. So, you know, Steve might have a different answer, but I really got nothing for you.
The one thing for me, and we've heard it from some of our reaction shows, is, you know, a lot of people, you know, Bucks fans will say, well, JPP isn't, you know, providing the same sort of, you know, all the pressure that he brought last year and the years prior with the Buccaneers. Like, he's taken kind of a step back. Now he is wearing the club on his right hand, so he's out there, you know, as the proverbial one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. But, you know, he's taken kind of a step back, but in his spot, they've started to use more of Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, and we're seeing, as Ren pointed out there, a lot more of an arsenal from the 32nd overall pick than anybody thought that he had. And I know it was more than he ever put down on film at Washington, and maybe having that year off and training in an NFL style facility to get ready for the professional ranks has helped him in that case. But really, there's been very little that you could say, well, that definitely was a step back. And JPP, like I said, you know, he's doing it with one arm tied behind his back. So you really can't go out and say, you know, that's a true step back.
I totally forgot what I was going to ask you. I had a follow-up, and then you talked me out of it there, Steve. Well, you know, it's just that I've been a fan of the underdog for so long, and I always kind of root for the teams that's only the real fans root for, kind of thing. You know, I always like to watch the team that comes from or teams that spend years in mediocrity come out along and doing it. So there was some kind of catharsis to watching Buccaneers do it, even though they did it with Tom Brady, of all people, you know, and kind of killed my argument forever about Brady not being the greatest quarterback of all time. Because he won it six times in the AFC where there's nothing in the AFC. It's like, okay, it's the Chiefs, or for years it was the Broncos and the Colts or the Steelers or the Patriots. And that's pretty much how it is in the AFC now. It's like, okay, it's the Chiefs, or it's, you know, maybe it'll be the Browns, maybe it'll be this team or that one or whatever. It's still a very top-heavy conference. Come to the NFC where we send a different team to Super Bowl every single year and see if you can do it there. Okay. And then he did, you know. And sure. He did it with the Buccaneers. Of all teams, he did it with the Buccaneers. They go to the Super Bowl and trounce the defending Super Bowl champions on their own field and everything. So
leave no doubt.
Leave no doubt. So, you know, so it was, like I said, it was kind of fun watching them do it, watching them take down the next New England, because it looks like the Chiefs are poised to do it all over again, kind of thing. So I don't know, but, you know, it's, and I talked to Ren about it. I had him on the show after the Super Bowl. It's like, dude, you guys won the Super Bowl. How does this feel? And all that kind of stuff. So it was a fun conversation that we had, because I was trying to live vicariously through him, because I don't think my team's going to be there anytime soon. So, you know, it's like looking, and I'm dreading this game on Sunday, because offense is where you guys are succeeding this year. You watch the highlights, and granted, it's a highlight, so select moments from the football game, but there's Brady and company making it look easy. Antonio Brown's wide open. You still have Chris Godwin. You still have, you know, Fournette, and you're doing things with Cam and Brayton, and all that kind of stuff. It's just shaping up to be a long afternoon, for the Bears. And after the way that we kind of collapsed against Green Bay. It's a game I'm not looking forward to. We're 1-3 or 1-2 on the road so far this year, and going into the home of the world champs is not a prospect for a good afternoon, in my opinion.
At least you're going at a time where it's not going to be ridiculously hot. Now there is going to be, looks like there's rain in the forecast, which should really make things a lot of fun. And that rain looks like, as I'm pulling up the daily forecasts here, just to see when this rain is supposed to come in. And yeah, it's not looking good. You're looking at like, well, it looks like the rain.
Carney, why are you doing the weather report on a Wednesday?
Because it's always important, Ren. This is what we do. This is what we do on the PewterCast back and forth.
Yeah.
Like I just gob off at the mouth and Ren tells me to shut up. But yeah, it looks like the rain is going to get going right around game time. So should be a fun one.
Yeah,
well, I guess that might benefit us in the running game, as far as, you know, the running back knows what cuts he's going to make and the defense has to react to it, kind of thing. But, you know, it's still, you know, the one trip that I made to Florida was actually to Tampa back in, it was 2001, but it was November and it was 85 and humid and I wanted to die while I was there because I just came from Illinois where it was 45 degrees outside. So imagine what you'd have to do
with jacket weather down here
with, you know, with the equipment on and the fact that the Bears are going to be wearing their dark jerseys instead of the white ones. On the road. So yeah, not, I don't know. We'll see how that all factors in.
There you go.
So the weather report on a Wednesday. Right.
Weather report Wednesday.
There you go. So you guys,
all new content, anything? Weather report Wednesdays.
Right. There you go.
New sponsor.
Anything free before we wrap this up.
Sponsor. We always ask, at the end of our show, clock hits zero. Bears are coming off the field at Raymond James Stadium victorious. How does it happen?
Well, what has worked for us this year? Like where we have succeeded, where our victories have come from, winning the turnover battle. Because we haven't had a game this year where we won the turnover battle and lost. That hasn't happened yet. So if the Bears are victorious against the Buccaneers, it's because we, number one, we forced multiple turnovers and we were able to turn them into something. Because that's what we did. That's how we beat the Bengals. They had four straight turnover drives against the Bengals, including a pick six from Roquan Smith. When we beat the Lions, we had three turnovers in that game. We beat the Raiders 1-0 in that game as well. So, I mean, that's been the trend for us so far. If the defense can force a takeaway and maybe we turn that into something, or maybe we've just killed an important drive for the Bucks or whatever, that would probably be the key proponent to our success, was that we forced turnovers in that ball game. Because like this past Sunday against Green Bay, not one single turnover by either team, frankly. Well, actually, no, we threw one interception, but it didn't really count. But Justin Fields thought he had a free play. And he went.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Went for the deep ball, and it got picked off, and the referees didn't call the offsides, so it ended up being an interception. But it was 3rd and 7, so it's kind of like Canadian football. We punted on 3rd down, kind of thing. Is how no one really faults Justin Fields for throwing that interception. It wasn't like it was the 4th quarter and he threw a interception that we absolutely couldn't allow, kind of thing. But we didn't force any turnovers on Rodgers. No fumbles. No turnovers. No interceptions. No nothing. And you know, lo and behold, we lost again. So, and in the other two losses that we have, no turnovers were forced in either of those games, not against the Rams or the Browns and the Packers. But also the other trend is we've gotten our asses kicked by the good teams and we've done well against the not so good teams. And you guys definitely fall under the good team category. So that's another trend that we'll probably hold, is that you guys are the good team. The good teams beat the okay/bad teams, and, you know, we move on from there. So, but if the Bears pull off a victory, it'll be because something that wasn't game plan took place, like us winning the turnover battle like 3-1 or something like that.
All right.
So I mean, would that, so let me flip the question on you. What would it take for the Bears to beat Tampa Bay this Sunday?
Malaria. you know, I don't know.
A COVID outbreak that includes Tom Brady and Chris Godwin.
You
can
say
and
that because Ren is of the opinion that he thinks that Blaine Gabbert could win 11 games this year.
Well, you know what? He did say that to me over the the offseason, that they have a very high opinion of Blaine Gabbert and what they'd be able to do.
They called him the most underrated player in the history of the National Football League.
Wow. Yes, verbatim.
Well, to tell you the truth, we've lost a game to Blaine Gabbert during his San Francisco days. He contributed that in two ways. Number one, we all apparently forgot that Blaine Gabbert can run, and he ran untouched for 40 yards and a touchdown to send the game to overtime. And then he threw a 70-yard touchdown pass. I forget who the receiver was, but 70-yard touchdown pass in overtime to win the game against us in Soldier Field. So I've fallen victim
player in NFL history.
Four, yes. So I've seen his flashes. But we also played Blaine Gabbert when he was with the Jaguars back in like 2010, and we won like 68-3 or something. It was bananas. He threw one interception after another. And I think Charles Tillman scored more touchdowns than our offense did in that game. So it was one of those. So I've seen both sides of Blaine Gabbert.
Here's how the Bears come out of this with a victory. It's going to be the offensive line has to do something in the passing game. They have to keep Justin Fields upright. They've got to give him an extra second or two to see the field. And because the Bucs secondary is so bombed out and depleted like Afghanistan, I do think that, you know, if you can get Moody and even Allen Robinson, I think you guys could be able to sustain drives in the passing game if Justin Fields gets enough time to stay upright. Keep him upright. I think you're in better shape than you think.
Right, because running a ball against you guys is still a problem, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where I want to go on. I think if you guys stay committed to the run, that would keep you in the game. Teams don't even try to run the Buccaneers anymore. I mean, the New England game, it was a new franchise record because it was a grand total of -1 yards that was ran against that defense. But when teams are only trying to run the ball like 6 times against you, 10 times against you, of course the yard is going to be super low. Now, in the last game against the Eagles, they decided to commit to the run sort of on one of their, I think it was their final drive, and Miles Sanders, you know, picked up some nice yardage. So with the secondary being banged up as it is, Todd Bowles is having to take defensive assets and sort of try to hide his corners. You know, he's dropping back edges in pass zone set. I mean, Vita Vea, I know he did this last year too, but if you watch close enough, there's nothing funnier than seeing a 330-pound nose guard drop back in the middle of the field and pass coverage and zone coverage. And he's doing things like that to sort of help out the back end. And if you're doing that, you know, taking away assets to stop the run, then of course you have a greater chance to, the Bears have a greater chance to actually be successful in that. So I think, you know, besides, like you said, Larry, you know, defensive touchdown, special team touchdown, you know, something that just goes crazy kind of off script.
Right.
I think that if the Bears stay committed to the run, they can keep it close, because what I've noticed, the offensive play calls tend to get a little, I don't want to say frantic, but I feel like they get rushed against teams they feel like they're going to beat. And they kind of, like, it's the second quarter and they're only up 10-7. So they're like trying to score 3 touchdowns on one drive, you know? Sure. And so the longer the Bears keep it close, I think the more sort of, not panicky, but I guess, you know, just not a steady hand on the tiller, and let's just march the ball down the field and get our points and, you know, and let the defense do their thing. But, you know, sort of like I said, like, okay, this needs to be a 10-point drive because we're only up three against the Bears and it's halfway through the second. What the hell's going on?
Right.
So that would be the way that, for me personally, I would think that the Bears would be their best shot to walk out of Tampa with a victory.
Okay. Well, I personally think that after the way that we played, you guys are going to annihilate us on Sunday.
Yeah, me too.
I've seen the spread, or at least the last I heard it was 12.5, which is a huge spread.
Yeah.
And I'm not good with gambling, or, you know, really couldn't even tell you what the hell that even means. But I would think, you know, the Bucks could do better than 12.5 points. So I would take that bet. However, I would have to word it in order to make it a bet. I'll take that over the Bears right now. Obviously, can we win? Yes, we can. We have a good enough defense to slow you guys down. It's just a matter of whether the offense can score enough points to do it. So can we win? Yes. Will we? I don't think so. So that's the question I ask myself, or the two questions I ask myself every single week. Can we win? Yes. This is the NFL. The Jaguars just won a game, so anybody can. Right. And, you know, but will we win? Probably not. No, I don't think so. So, no, I think we'll be 3-4 when we get on the train. The plane back to Chicago will be 3-4. So that's how I feel.
It's something we didn't talk about. I think Brady's kind of took it really personally, losing in primetime to the Bears with.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. With what did we have, like 80 yards in penalties and like five plays in a row or something? It was like first down on the Bears 30, and then we're punting from like our own 20. You know, and it was all penalty yards. It was those like sack yards in there, and then of course the fourth down
of that Thursday night game, Ren, was the fact that there was another drive like that where it was like first and 36, and you guys got a first down like on the very next play. You know, like Roquan Smith came running in like a bat out of hell with his head down or something like that. Ronald Jones made a miss, and then he ran for a first down after that. Just like, great. We get them pinned all the way back in our own territory. You give up a 40-yard run on the next play. Nice job, guys. So, yeah, we had those moments. But then Brady had his senior moment.
I did.
Third down when it was actually fourth, and nearly threw an interception, actually. But and we came away with a miracle victory in that one. That was the best win we had all season, man. The best one we had all year was beating the future world champs in prime time. Our first win over Brady. Which I'm sure that's another reason he wants revenge against the Bears, is that he never lost to them before, and then he did so on national TV. So, yeah, a lot of things for Brady to be pissed about going into this week.
Should be a fun one.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, fun for you guys. I don't know how it's going to be for us. So we'll see if my pessimism can somehow turn into a miracle win, and I'll be sitting here gladly eating my own words when I review the game on Monday. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes. I'm going to be going on vacation, going back home to the Chicagoland to see the family. So nice. I'll be watching the game with my dad, which is always interesting. And should be interesting watching him not throw shit at the TV so he doesn't break it.
Are you in the city itself or are you in the suburbs?
Well, dad lives in northwest Indiana, which is basically like Chicago East. So. Yeah, in that area, yeah, Gary, Merrillville, those towns and everything. But we were in the city forever, lived in the suburbs, and then he decided to get the hell out of Illinois. So he's as close to Illinois as you can get without actually being in it anymore in northwest Indiana. So, yeah. Well, guys, I appreciate this. This has been a lot of fun. I look forward to creating some reason to have you guys back on. Like maybe we can be same place finishers again next season, because I don't think we played the NFC South last year. This was a same place game because somehow, even though you won the world championship, you were still a second place team in your division last year. So we'll see if we can work our way up to first place so we can do it again next year or something, create some reason to have you guys back on the show.
Yeah, I was talking to my roommate earlier today, and I was telling him how I was going to cheat on the pod, as in putting this up as our pod and you putting up as your pod. And I'm like, yeah, I got this guy named Larry. And I just thought about it. I'm like, like, we have played the Bears like 5 times in the past 6 years. Like, yeah. I feel like I talk to you like every year, sometimes
just about every year. Yeah.
It has been so weird, but hopefully, you know, the streak continues.
Yeah. So starting when I think I had you guys on for the first time in 2017, we played again in 2018. I think 2019 was the exception, and then last year, and then this year again.
Yeah.
So yeah, 4 out of the last 5 years, the Bucks have been on the schedule. Wow. So yeah, works for me. So I love having you guys on. So we'll look forward to having you on again, and good luck on Sunday. Win or lose, at least hopefully everybody comes out healthy so we don't have to worry about any more injuries.
Yes, I'll toast to that.
All right. Thanks again, guys.
And that will do it for this Thursday episode of the PewterCast. Again, subscribe to the PewterCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and the likes. Leave us ratings and a review. We will be back live on Friday as Barry Barger from BetUS.com will join us at that time. Thank you to BetUS and to the Fansided Network for being our great sponsors here today. And until Friday, go Buck yourself.